Capsule Podcast with your host, Child of the 80s Jeff, and Dr. Retro Joel. This episode, we're talking teen dramas from the 80s. Our special guest is Christy Woodstraw.
Cinema Time Capsule's mission is to curate and compile the best genre movies of the 1980s for future generations to enjoy. We review the movies with help from our esteemed guests to decide collectively if they are as good as we remember them. The movies that are placed in the Cinema Time Capsule are chosen by you, the viewer, so head to the lobby and get yourself a treat. This episode, we're reviewing 80s teen movies. I am your host, Child of the 80s, Jeff, and alongside me is my esteemed co-host, the Doctor of all things retro, Joel.
Bonsai!
You just do that on purpose just to get me off track. I had to come up with
something, yeah.
Ayo.
Okay, so this week we have as our special guest, Christy Woodstraw. She is a writer and editor, and she's written for her places like The Walrus, Broadview, and Today's Parent, and has an award-nominated book titled High Rise, The Towers of the World and the World in Towers, which, even though it would be appropriate for our podcast, is not about the department store.
Oh, towers. I love towers.
One of my favorites.
But maybe that's an idea for the next book.
Love it.
All about towers.
Just the font of towers alone. And
that would actually be a good
fantastic
book. Towers, Bargain Heralds,
yeah,
Economy Fair.
I heard you're also a textile artist. Is this true?
It's true.
Yes.
It is true.
Jeff's getting
and
me back
a font
on track.
Nerd.
So, yes, Christy makes quilts and grumpy faces, which are cute little stuffed animals. And you can see these at her website, which is gezelegstudio.ca, in addition to being a mom and a partner and my friend.
Thank you so much. That is so kind.
Glad to have you.
I am. How did you get a guest so esteemed? That's my question.
I tricked her.
This is pretty awesome.
It's free coffee.
This is awesome. So Christy, it's one of the things that we do here is when you come on the show, you give us a little breakdown of when you were born and your favorite things from the 80s, like some toys, foods, or TV shows. Just kind of frame where you're coming
you
from.
Age me now. Born in 1975, 75ers forever.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are a few of us right here, I hope.
No. Nope.
Or am I aging myself?
Simon's
the oldest.
Yeah.
He was born in 1953.
You're in between us.
Oh, we have a range. That's good.
Yep.
Well, thank you so much, though, for the welcome. I really appreciate it. But yes, I was born in 1975, and so the 80s were definitely formative in my pop culture references. I loved, for toys, I loved Cabbage Patch dolls.
Of course.
I had one.
I wished.
What was your Cabbage Patch's name?
Her real name was Camilla Sybil, and I changed it to Ashley Elizabeth.
Whoa, okay. And then did you write to Xavier to do the name change?
Yeah, so I had her new birth certificate.
I made mine a teacher, and I had to send it in. Mine was Lewis, and you had to send in the changes.
Really? Change the name when you adopted them.
And Xavier accepted your request?
Apparently, yes.
And you changed the occupation as well. You could.
Oh, really? I remember
you
that.
Gave babies occupation.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't remember that.
Sorry to interrupt, but I am a Cabbage Patch bro.
And I had my Cabbage Patch doll quite late. Like I didn't get her until like I was 10.
Well, so. You couldn't because they were all gone every Christmas.
I think my mom was at Shoppers Drug Mart at just the right time.
Right.
Just a new delivery had been made. She had a choice. Like she wasn't fighting off
she was picking
crowds.
From the patch.
Yeah, it was wild. Unheard of. I also really love Scratch and Sniff stickers.
So yep.
Roller skates. I had metal ones that tied onto
shoes of course.
From Canadian Tire.
We had roller gardens here, which was awesome.
We did have in Barrie. I grew up in Barrie and Ontario, and we did have a roller rink that,
I love that.
I quite often skated to. I wear my sunglasses at night.
Mm-hmm.
I also loved Rubik's Cubes. I had a vast collection of different shapes and sizes.
Could you finish one though?
No.
No.
I
Every kid nowadays
off.
Finishes them in 30 seconds.
Because they have YouTube.
Yeah.
Transformers.
Really?
Were also a massive favorite. We collected them from the Esso station. Every time you got a fill up, you could get a Transformer. And I watched a lot of TV.
Yep, that's
a lot.
Good.
We didn't have cable. I don't know if you guys did.
Nope.
So I was watching.
Here.
Okay, excellent. So, and I didn't live close to the border. So I had to watch whatever was on our local station. Mm-hmm. Friendly Giant, Mr. Dress Up, Littlest Hobo,
excellent.
The Edison Twins, if you guys remember the
we
Edison Twins.
We just did an
twins.
Episode on
that
Edison
was the last
Twins.
Episode.
Oh, that's right. Oh, you guys are so good. Degrassi, of course, which was also your last episode. Beachcombers, Danger Bay, Seeing Things.
I don't remember that one.
Oh,
I don't remember that one.
It's about
one.
A detective. Okay.
We'll have to look into it, apparently.
How did I miss that?
And he's like a balding guy with big glasses, and he like saw. He was like a mentalist.
Hmm.
He saw things.
Is this
things.
A kid's show?
I watched it as a kid, okay. But it probably wasn't a kid's show.
Gotcha.
And the raccoons.
Yes.
Yeah,
Cyril awesome. Sneer.
Absolutely.
Anyway, I'll stop, but I could go on.
What was Barry's TV channel? Because I remember I used to watch it. Do you remember the call letters? Because
CKVR.
Yeah, oh, I love CKVR.
They had.
Do you remember that, Simon?
They would show old shows. It wasn't Leave It to Beaver.
Yeah,
yeah,
I
love CKVR.
So I watched just before lunch.
Yes.
I watched I Love Lucy. And then the Andy Griffith Show.
Right.
And then Leave It to Beaver.
Yeah, yeah.
Those three, yeah.
Right. And I think after school was Gilligan's Island.
Yeah, absolutely.
Killer.
Well,
killer lineup.
And remember Hercules?
Of course. I loved it. Yeah. The cartoon.
Hero of Song and Story.
Is there anything else?
Hercules.
Herc.
Yeah. I remember that station a lot. It had all Rocket Robin Hood and Hercules.
Yeah. My mom.
And I think they played WKRP later, like after school type times.
So
I remember
good.
Watching that.
Three's Company.
Yeah.
That was anathema in my house. Couldn't watch that.
So my sister, we would fight when my sister's 7 years older. And so we would fight when we got home from school and I always beat her. Mm. And so I could choose what I wanted to watch, which would be like, we got like two channels.
Yeah.
So she wanted to watch Three's Company, I remember.
Okay.
And then I would be like, no, I'm watching Hercules. She's like, you've watched every episode 20 times.
Because they're so good.
And I'm like, uh-huh. And, and that's a problem.
Yeah.
I used to love The Ring. I'd run around with my mother's rings on pretending I was powered up.
Hoping anyway, for some lightning
we'll
to occur.
We'll do a CKVR episode.
Maybe, yeah.
You could. I actually wrote a story and was blackballed from every City TV affiliate.
Really?
When I did a story on the new VR and when City TV took over all of the smaller stations.
Yeah, well, we knew about that, and then mm-hmm. we're breaking that. That's why we had you on the show.
Yeah.
We're not standing for that.
I was blackballed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my
they
gosh.
Did not
well,
like my article.
Well, now you're back. Oh,
yep. This is you re-entering the media.
Oh, that was like a badge of honor,
sure.
Like as a journalist, being blackballed.
They
ideal.
Know who I am.
What was his name? Moses Zimer.
Moses Zimer.
He has no sway on this book.
Nope.
Podcast.
Nope.
Actually, I think you just bought it. So,
oh shit.
You wish.
Sorry, Moses.
I'm definitely off. This is where you cut my mic.
We're gonna have to re-record.
Okay. For this episode, we compiled a list of 80s teen movies. The movies in the Cinema Time Capsule can be found on letterboxd.com/childoftheeighties. As always, we created a list of 6 films, with each of us selecting 2 that we would like to see in the Cinema Time Capsule. In no particular order, we chose Can't Buy Me Love, Footloose, Dead Poets Society, Girls Just Want to Have Fun, The Karate Kid, and Say Anything. So if you're asking yourself, hey, where's The Breakfast Club, 16 Candles, there's a lot of other chatter about movies that we left out. We decided we're going to do a John Hughes teen movie episode in the future. So we're saving those ones. And always, we have left out a ton. So we will revisit the teen genre at some point.
Yep.
So Joel, our selections, who chose them?
Well, so Jeff, you went with Say Anything and Dead Poets Society. I chose Footloose and Can't Buy Me Love. And Christy grabbed Girls Just Want to Have Fun and The Karate Kid.
Now I'm just going to have
how you
karate.
Say it. That's how you say
Is
it.
Is that's proper vernacular?
I don't actually
okay,
know.
Okay, you just made it up.
No, I stole it from Gary Goldman. He's a comedian and he has a killer bit about Karate Kid
karate.
That we'll listen to later.
So what makes the 80s teen movie genre so unique in comparison from other decades, folks? What do you see or what do you notice?
Well, I thought that the timing, we're entering the early 80s was a high level of a sway in terms of politics. There's a great, the conservative wave came across North America and out of the 60s and 70s being much more tumultuous and progressive. And so they seem to have settled down, at least in this genre, as we'll hear and have already bantered about. There's some questionable things that occur in 80s movies and some movies are, there's not a lot of diversity. The politics are fairly straightforward and plain and
not
often
a lot of
problematic.
Women.
Nope. Not a lot of diversity and
gender
or
background.
Yep. So that was some of the things that had gone on before, and thinking they, movies became an escape from regular life, but explored the experiences of regular teens, social issues they were encountering, how they responded in real life, or at times it seems just on the silver screen, because none of us have ever been to a party that occurs in an 80s teen movie. They're just bananas.
We will talk about that. Christy, yes. Did you notice anything specific about the genre, of the teen genre in the 80s?
I mean, I kind of feel like it was a reflection, too, of the Gen X mind, mm-hmm. or a mentality around never give in to the man, mm-hmm. and don't, you know, do things that you're passionate about and really care about. So it was a bit of a, you know, getting away from the boomer ideology of making money and caring, mm-hmm. about, you know, basically the dream, like what the Canadian or American dream should have been. Mm-hmm. And it was more about following your passion, mm-hmm. and doing what you want. And, yeah. And so I feel like that was a real reflection of our generation, mm-hmm. as well at that time. So that was interesting. And I'm just trying to think too, like, I feel like that's when teen movies really blew up. Like,
yeah,
there were
sure.
really, absolutely. I'm trying to think, what were the teen movies before that? There were a few,
yep.
but that was like, that became so popular for Hollywood. And obviously they saw a market that wasn't being tapped into. Right. So, I feel like that's when the teen movie really exploded.
The fashion sense that was, you know, prevalent, the music was just amazing. The soundtracks. And for me, I was not a teenager in the 80s. So this was me learning how to be a teenager, which is probably not the greatest roadmap. But I would watch these movies very excitedly.
Were you saying he's so much younger than us?
No, we're the same age.
Okay.
more of just poor examples of probably shouldn't do some of these things.
No, absolutely. But that's all movies, right? Like, it's kind of aspirational.
I wonder, too, the what you said in terms of who our parents were, you know, the earlier generation. Mm-hmm. So then at that, in all of these movies, pretty much everyone is middle to upper class, middle to upper income. So kids are just, you know, they've got tons of time. They got a car because, of course, they're 16.
They all had cars.
And
why did all the males have like defined jawlines and huge muscles and beards?
He didn't have a car.
He did have a bicycle, but he ended up getting a free car. We'll get into that.
But there are some class discussions in some of these. But yeah, for the most part, it's the middle to upper income, mm-hmm. Joel. And, and living in the suburbs, usually not living downtown.
So there weren't a lot of them aren't mm-hmm. experiencing any social challenges in terms of poverty and such. And so, and it probably was
Cruddy
why
Kid does talk
a little
about
bit,
that,
yeah. But then that's where the whole generation of kids, now it being an untapped market, they also have the money that, because we can just go watch movies.
Girls Just Want to Have Fun was also a discussion on class between mm-hmm. Jeff and the main character.
Right, that's true. Yep.
Right,
working class. Yep, mm-hmm. yep. That does enter.
So we'll be exploring all of these movies in great detail. We're going to take a quick break and begin with our first film. Our first film is Say Anything from 1987. The film stars John Cusack, Ione Skye, Joan Cusack, Lily Taylor from Born on the 4th of July. She's also in Rudy and High Fidelity. John Mahoney from Frasier, and the omnipresent Jeremy Piven, who goes from bald to very full of hair throughout the 90s and into the 2000s. This film was written and directed by Cameron Crowe, who dances all through the 80s and 90s, mm-hmm. and I think maybe the 2000s.
Still going.
With Almost Famous. And it was produced by James L. Brooks. Say Anything is a 1989 comedy drama directed by Cameron Crowe. The film follows the story of Lloyd Dobler, John Cusack, a charming underachiever, and Diane Court, Ione Skye, class Victorian, who fall in love during the summer after they graduate from high school. Lloyd has been pursuing Diane for months, and finally she agrees to go out with him. Despite the difference in their social status and her father's disapproval, they quickly fall in love. But as their relationship deepens, Lloyd and Diane's personal lives begin to unravel, and they are forced to confront their fears and insecurities. As their relationships become more strained, Lloyd and Diane must decide whether to stay together, despite the obstacles, or go their separate ways. In the end, they both learn valuable lessons about love, life, and the importance of following their hearts.
So why did you choose this movie, Jeffrey?
Well, for me, as a teen, becoming, you know, I think we were 13 in 1990. Mm-hmm. I just saw this film and you know, I wanted to be Lloyd Dobler. John Cusack plays this atypical romantic lead. Mm-hmm. Ione Skye is not the prototypical it girl.
True.
That you would see throughout the 80s. And Lloyd is sensitive. He's awkward, but he is a heck of a kickboxer.
Absolutely.
But yet he's not an alpha male.
Nope.
Which is refreshing in that genre.
Mm-hmm. Sensitive.
Yes, he's sensitive. And it's everything I wanted to be when I was a youngster.
It felt more achievable.
It did feel more Absolutely. Achievable.
Yep.
I felt I could be more like Lloyd Dobler than, say, like one of the 30-year-old jocks portraying a 17-year-old.
Right. So should this movie go into the cinema time capsule, in your view?
So if it does go into the cinema time capsule, I would push for it. It has a lot of style. It's got a lot of wit. Cameron Crowe, I think, should be in the cinema time capsule at some point. He does an excellent job mm-hmm. painting a picture of teen life.
Yep. And,
you know, he shows depth that you don't necessarily see in Fast Times at Ridgemont High, which right. I like, but is more problematic to me now mm-hmm. as I rewatch it.
Yep.
So I'd be ecstatic if this would go into the cinema time capsule. Folks, what do you think, any thoughts? Any thoughts? Jump in.
Christy.
Well, it's iconic. Mm-hmm. Like the scene with the boombox in the rain.
Absolutely.
I still can't believe rewatching it, I forgot that she just turned over and didn't even look out at him.
Would that work?
100%. It would totally work.
Okay, I just
to make you turn totally over. Work. Like I'm ignoring.
No, I'd at least
guy.
Go to the window. No.
Shut up!
I'm trying to sleep. Like that was amazing.
Yeah.
I would, you know, if that happened at my household, I would call the police.
You wouldn't.
It's not stalkery.
I would contend you wouldn't even know it was happening because it'd just be some dumb teenager holding up their phone and it can't be that loud.
You can't even hear
it.
So
then they're like, I don't know, there's some guy out there in a trench coat. He's holding something up. Let's just turn the lights off and go back to sleep.
I think if they hadn't been dating and he pulled that, that would be weird.
It was like, yeah, a really iconic moment mm-hmm. in cinematic history, and it's been parodied. But the way it was written was pretty.
Well, I feel like it embodied teen angst and teen love, like heartbreak. Like we could all feel that really, as a teenager being dumped or liking someone who doesn't like you. It's just so much.
And I don't
pain.
Know what to do. Like he let Peter Gabriel speak for him and wanted to show
that Peter became Gabriel my song. Does so well.
But that became my song when I heard. Like I was like, what? Who is this?
Yeah.
Peter that's Gabriel. True. That's true. Movies often did expose us to the music that
yeah,
we may
I still
not
love
have
that song.
Known
yeah,
this,
about.
The soundtrack for this one is phenomenal. Is really good.
Yeah. Who had a ghetto blaster? Did anyone?
Oh wait.
Oh no.
I wish.
What kind of a
you didn't?
No. No.
Oh, I did. Simon, you had a ghetto blaster.
Oh yeah, for sure.
I had a
the
dual
sound guy better have had one.
I had a dual cassette. Did you have
oh,
a dual
yeah,
cassette?
Dual
how many?
Cassette?
How
oh,
many D
sure.
batteries? Did oh it yeah,
you'd run it for about 10 minutes. And then the batteries would die. So it'd be in your eyes. And that's it. And
okay, then wait. I didn't have like the big silver ghetto blaster, but one Christmas, so my dad's factory used to have like a Christmas party and they would give all the kids a present.
Cool.
And I got a pink cassette player.
Whoa.
I don't think it was dual, but at least I
could
play.
Could you record it?
Off the
I
radio?
Could record off the radio, yeah, yes. Yeah.
We did.
As
I
we all
that.
Did. Or
Casey Kasem's top 40. Simon, did you have the silver one or the exclusive black one?
Mine
or
was
a pink
black.
One.
Yeah, that's possible.
I knew Simon
black.
Would have the black
and
one.
It had removable speakers.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Put them back on.
Oh, yeah. Simon was the rich kid.
He's from the West End.
You know, hey, listen. I had a paper route. I paid for that thing myself. I had two paper routes.
Whoa.
Okay, I delivered a lot
you
of
had
papers
a lot of time.
For that thing.
Yeah. No, that's impressive.
Yeah. Well, the one paper route was on my own street, so it worked out well. Yeah.
No.
That's so fair. Yeah, and then Lloyd's trench coat, so the fashion of the time, mm-hmm. like he just had his own thing going, which gave hope to nerds like me.
You never wore a trench coat, though.
No, I didn't, but I wore lots of dorky clothes and thought, well, maybe girls will still like me one day.
You need to pop the collar like Lloyd did.
Yeah, that's true.
It would have been cool.
My t-shirts didn't have collars, though. That's all I wore.
And things haven't changed.
No.
You stick with your uniform.
Absolutely. I want to be consistent.
Well, see, watching it, though, I didn't identify with Lloyd at all. I was more identifying with Diane mm-hmm. because I was the super academic, nerdy person who was not like the most popular in high school. Or
were you valedictorian?
No, I was not. Oh. I was Students Council president, though.
That's pretty close.
Same thing.
Yeah.
So you did identify with her?
Rewatching it now, I remember when I watched it, I found her really annoying for some reason. I didn't know why. And then, obviously as an adult, you watch it and you have gained a bit of perspective. Every decision she made was based on what either her dad or Lloyd told her to do.
Right.
Which was super irritating.
Mm-hmm.
I also didn't love how Lloyd wore her down into going out with him. Like he didn't take no as an answer. And that was one consistent theme I was realizing. It's like, wow, the 80s really did teach all of society that when a girl says no, she doesn't mean no, but just wear her down and she'll eventually say yes. It's like, wow, this is terrible.
Mm-hmm.
So that I was like, oh yeah, I did find her annoying in just that she didn't make decisions for herself. And I'm like, she's got the highest marks. She's so smart. She's, a goal. She has a goal, even though it's her father's goal.
Mm-hmm.
And then just listening to her dad gaslight her and all these really toxic, messaging to Diane was frustrating.
Mm.
But still rewatching it, to be honest, like despite those flaws, I do feel like it holds up. I feel like it is an iconic movie of our age.
You mentioned something about, and I don't know if I'll pronounce it correctly, the Bechdel test.
It's Bechdel, yeah.
Bechdel?
It's actually, I think I put an L in there and it's no L. It's just Bechdel.
Bechdel. Can you go into that for our viewers?
Sure.
That may not understand it.
It's a test that was developed years ago just to kind of demonstrate the inequality in movies in gender roles and the lack of female representation in movies in general. And so the test is that if a movie includes a conversation between two women that does not involve a man, that is, the conversation's not about a man or a boy, then it passes the Bechdel test in terms of giving a woman a bit more character than just being the love interest,
right,
or to, basically boost the man's ego kind of thing.
Mm.
And the test has changed a little bit. It has advanced and now they say, like, if the woman's also named, I think there might be other characteristics, but I just went with the core of the test and I was looking at these movies as to whether or not they would pass the Bechdel test, and not surprisingly, most of them do not.
Thanks for bringing that perspective, though, because sometimes we notice these things, but we don't know how to really drill down and deconstruct it.
Yeah, me too. Absolutely. Well, even for me, it's like watching these movies again through the lens now of things I've learned as an adult or the Bechdel test.
Yep.
It's like, oh yeah, there's no conversation in this movie between two women. Like, how is that possible? How can there be no women in this movie having a conversation about anything other than the guy?
Right.
Like, which, wild.
Yeah, you're right. Now that you say that, this one is interesting in that look through a different way that it sort of is two people. Like, both are the main characters.
Yeah.
I would say if you had asked me before, oh yeah, this movie's about Lloyd Dobler, but it's actually about both of them. They both are primary. It's not just she's the add-on supporting cast and to play his love interest, but we learn a lot about her and what her interests are in terms of, like, what you said, that she wrestles, like there's scenes of her wrestling with her own wishes, with what Lloyd wants her to do, with what her dad wants to do, and what she ultimately decides to do. And I wouldn't have thought of it that way. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep. And definitely a male gaze on Diane's character.
Sure.
Yeah, I don't know if I would pursue Diane like this if I was Lloyd. Because, like, he goes down a rabbit hole. It gets, like, a little bit disturbing. I was watching with my daughter. I'm like, I don't know if I want this guy
That's interesting.
Coming to my house. Mm-hmm. And like even the scene, I thought it was one of the funniest scenes is when they're at the Quickie Mart. The kids are all, the teenagers are all in a row and they're trying to give him advice. And they're like kind of derogatory in their advice. It was, I think it was a very funny scene, but I thought that was interesting. And my favorite part was when the 12-year-old kid like chimes in from nowhere. He just like jumps in, says something really derogatory and then jumps back out and you never see him again.
Yeah, no, it's true. And when you do watch it from a different perspective, it suddenly you start to see how women are portrayed in these movies. Like, and back to the Bechdel test, it's surprising. I think only two movies, this is one of them, passed the test out of all of our choices.
Wow.
And like you said, Joel, Diane is a significant character, but her role is like the only conversation she has with another girl that is not about Lloyd or really about Lloyd or her dad is where she signs a friend's yearbook. And the friend is like, you inspired me to do really well in school. Yeah. That is the only conversation. And that's a conversation.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. Because they actually made her character a loner. Like she was so smart and disengaged socially that she didn't have any friends.
Yeah, she has no character.
Yeah.
Other than to prop up Lloyd or her father. And like the only guy in who's straight with her, like even Lloyd isn't straight with her. The only guy who's straight with her in this entire movie is the IRS agent about her dad and tells her straight, your dad is not an honest person. And it's like, wow, the IRS guy is the, is the most trusted male in this movie. Wow.
Yeah, that doesn't look good.
No. No, Cameron. And Cameron was a writer for hire on this, right? Like, it wasn't his idea.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
I did a little bit of a
I did not know that.
Yeah. I hope that's right. I'm sure your listeners will correct me if I'm
Cameron
right.
Will probably call in.
True.
He's usually bothering us.
It's annoying. So he's needy. So needy.
Yeah. Yeah, the only kind of, like, really strong female character was, what's her name? Corey. And most of the story, she was, like, upset about Joe. And writing songs about Joe.
Right.
I thought she was like a... I think she would have done well as an adult. But watching her unravel about Joe, I was just like, come on, Corey, you're so cool. Move on.
Yeah. And did you know that Joe's the other love interest, or who she was so upset about, I think it was Mimi, and she was played by Chyna Phillips.
Yes. Yep, Wilson Phillips.
Oh, I did not know that. I didn't know
and
that.
And daughter of Mamas and Papas, right? Little known fact.
One of the things that I really noted was the party scene. And Joel already mentioned this.
Yep.
The 80s party scenes depicted in films is ridiculous.
Insane.
Were there parties like that? Simon, did you ever go to a party that was out of control, like the one in Say Anything?
Or like any
80s. Or Can't Buy Me Love.
I wasn't that cool. I didn't get invited to those parties. But they did happen. Maybe not quite to that extent. I think the parties would get out of control. Too many people would show up. The cops would have to be called. But there wasn't the decadence inside the party, right?
It wasn't like ripping things apart.
Yeah, every movie seemed to have a huge house. Parents were nowhere to be found. They had tons of booze and people, and apparently DJs showing up and just playing loud music. Yeah, they were bananas. I didn't know anybody that ever had that kind of house and then threw a party.
What did you say bananas for? Like they went bananas?
It was no,
the
just
size
like
of the house.
Yeah,
the,
like
the
it's
how
crazy.
Rich they were.
Yeah, everything about every scene
beyond
in the 80s
your
movie
it was
crazy.
It was bananas because it was over the top.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Well, in Barry,
there
they
were
had
bananas
a lot of...
in none of the parties.
There were no
so
bananas.
It was not realistic at all.
in Barry, there were I didn't go to these, but there were a lot of bush parties.
Yes. See, yeah, they would happen
so
outside
in the wilderness.
Yeah. I had a lot of parties. I had many parties.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there was. There was police involvement, at least one or two, but like there was never, I never had any damage. Well, someone like threw my tiki torches like into the backwoods, but that was it.
And did you ever have like in the, all of these, there's kids that you don't know that from school or maybe from a neighboring school. Did you ever have that?
So that didn't happen to me, but it did happen to
Jeremy Haringa.
No, well that happened to him because he put posters up everywhere and we went. My friend Josh and I went to that party and it was canceled.
Yes.
Because that was stupid. But Jamie Kay had a party.
Oh, yeah.
and it went bonkers.
Oh, okay.
And we had to run around going, the cops are coming. We didn't call the cops, but it did
get everyone out.
Yeah. Okay. So, but like it did get like slightly out of hand, but not like this.
Hmm.
But I have to say, I was very, I thought it was very cool that Lloyd took all the keys. Because I didn't think that was a thing in the 80s, because I thought everyone just got bombed and drove around.
No, absolutely. I thought that was very responsible, Lloyd. Very responsible.
And they never talked about DUIs in the 80s. It's just like, I've only had a couple, and then they go.
No, absolutely.
Anything else we're missing?
There was a real lack of diversity in the movie. I know we've touched on that before. Mm-hmm. And Lloyd actually sees a black character at the party and calls him homeboy.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's a real lack of diversity in this movie overall.
Yep. And in a couple of others as well.
Oh, it's an issue, I think, in all but one. But even that one's an issue. I think
we could just make that blanket statement for, like, unfortunately, almost all the movies we've talked about on this podcast could be more diverse.
Any diversity. So
that's an understatement.
Any diversity.
Mm-hmm.
A girl.
Mm-hmm.
A girl would be novel. A member of a 50% of the population who didn't just talk about a boy.
It's true.
That'd be cool. I'd like that. Another little fact about this movie is Barbara Streisand's son, isn't it?
Hmm.
At the party, the kid who gets drunk in the bathroom.
The kid with the shaved head?
Did he have a shaved head?
Was the kid that they drove home?
I love
that. I love that guy.
So that was Jason Gould.
Hmm.
Oh, that's cool.
And I guess the producer, he said the movie was inspired when he saw a man walking with his daughter, and he just thought of what would happen to the daughter if the father committed a crime. Just like a whim of a thought, and then this
turned
movie
into this.
And it's weird because I remember that the side story of that, and I didn't really particularly enjoy it while I was watching it. Like, I really didn't want to know anything.
You're
about
identifying with Lloyd.
I didn't want to know anything about Diane Court's dad. I don't care if he goes to jail. Even rewatching, I'm like, let's move on with this.
Yeah.
Well, and it was interesting. I was listening to an interview with the creator of Degrassi while I was rewatching these movies.
Yep.
And her whole kind of theme for Degrassi was creating a show through teens' eyes, right? And so I was looking at these movies from that perspective then. It's like, which of these movies was truly from a teen perspective and not about father-daughter relationship or, you know, aging parents?
Right.
Or do you know what I mean? Like, when you rewatch them, you realize, were these really for and about teens, or were they for the parents and had a teen kind of star sort of, do you know what I mean? Like,
I wonder if it was Hollywood saying, here, teens, this is for you, but it's not generated from the bottom up. It's top
very
down.
Very true.
In that way.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. This is so from our perspective for you.
Yeah. And then, like what you said, Jeff, this is potentially inspiring or encouraging kids of like, oh, this is what it means to be cool as a teenager instead of that's not our experience.
Yeah.
It flips it.
And then the nerds start to win, right? Because you see, like, because obviously I'm sure a lot of writers and directors were nerds in high school, and so the nerds start to win because they're the ones making these movies,
right? They take revenge as it is.
Let's not cover that one.
They didn't peak in high
very
school.
Problematic. So I just to wrap this one up, my wife and I really like this movie. This is a romantic movie. She's going to cringe that. We ended up watching it with my daughter, though, as well. And she didn't mind it.
Yeah, no, my daughter doesn't mind it either. Yeah.
So, you know, if you don't deconstruct anything, you just watch it and you don't think too much. It's a really kind of endearing film.
Don't think.
Well,
just don't think.
I think you can do both. That then, you can watch it, appreciate it at a superficial level, but then there's substance there to what you've referenced to engage with. And what does this tell us? What do we take from it? That's maybe okay and maybe not okay.
Yeah.
And I gave her my heart and she gave me a pen.
Yeah.
It's classic line.
Listen to the Blenderhead song.
Hit you right in the feels. Okay. Joel, we're moving on to 1984. Tell us your film.
Simon, do you want to
stop? Take five.
Yeah.
We're going to take five listeners so you can listen into the hot mic.
Yeah.
And Cameron Crowe can call us.
He's the new kid in town, and the music's on his side.
Let's dance!
Footloose.
Footloose. Get the sun, loose. Please, Louise,
Paramount Pictures presents Footloose.
And Joel is up with our next film. And Joel, what did you choose?
I chose 1984's Footloose. So it starred the King of Connections, Kevin Bacon, as Ren, Laurie Singer, John Lithgow, Diane Wiest.
Yeah, that's how it's pronounced.
Yep. Who was also the grandma in Life in Pieces. I recognized her.
She's in so many things. Yeah. She's a classic character actor.
Chris Penn and Sarah Jessica Parker. So it was written by Dean Pitchford, directed by Herbert Ross, who also had a couple hits in the 80s of The Secret of My Success, Max Dugan Returns, and Steel Magnolias.
Classic.
And produced by Daniel Malnick, Lewis Rackmill, and Craig Zidane. So Footloose follows the story of Ren, who moves in from Chicago and is in shock when he discovers the small Midwestern town he now calls home made dancing and rock music illegal, led by the influential pastor Reverend Moore. As he struggles to fit in, Ren faces an uphill battle to change things. With the help of his new friend Willard and the pastor's defiant daughter Ariel, he might loosen up this conservative town.
Yeah.
He did it.
Oh, you spoiled it.
Okay, on to the next movie.
Why did you choose this movie? Because I asked you right away, and this was like, boom, you just dropped it right away.
Well, it's the one that jumped to my mind immediately, possibly because it's my wife's favorite movie from that era.
You guys are so sentimental.
Yeah.
She told me it was Conan, so.
Well, that also is in the list. I like that it has two strong characters, and one male, one female. They're both, while there might be problematic elements, she's featured prominently and gets to speak against her father, for example. And yes, she plays.
She only speaks about boys.
Okay.
No, but she does speak to her father. You're right.
And about herself. That's
true.
I just want to jump in here. Sorry. I want to remind Christy that this is an audio podcast, so the looks you're giving Joel of derision are not going to come through.
They're like, it's probably good. They're needles. That's probably good.
I'm sure that everyone can feel it.
And I'm holding back. That's the scary part.
Well, save it up, and then let go.
No.
It featured montage. So this is like the dance version of Rocky. There are montages.
We're going to dig deep
into these. Which were awesome.
Oh, my gosh.
I also appreciated the moral tension between the residents of a conservative town, a small town with the liberal outsider, and growing up in the home that I did, then I could relate a bit to that tension that existed. So those are some of my reasons.
Should this go in the cinema time capsule?
I think it should.
Okay.
I think, similar to Say Anything, it's iconic. If you grew up in the 80s, you knew the characters, you knew the soundtrack. It still is probably, it's got to be like top five, top 10 from the 80s.
In 1984, it was it was on the Billboard charts for months.
Yeah. So, and probably as an album itself, let alone a soundtrack.
Yeah.
I think this is like when they started selling soundtracks with movies, right? Like I remember buying albums because of the movie all the time.
Mm-hmm. Kenny Loggins, good grief.
Yeah, and then
he's the king.
It just basically locked him in our lexicon, right?
Yep. So that's
marketing at its finest.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Did it.
Yeah.
Yep.
100%.
So I vote for it. Or endorse it.
Okay. So what are some things that would make you want to, like, we'll just collectively talk about it in terms of like some of the highs that we really liked about the film, just to push it for the
opening scene. Like the opening scene, you know, the tapping feet. This is what I remember the most.
Yep.
Okay. So
it was intriguing.
Wonderfully shot. When I watched this on VHS, I'm sure, because we didn't really go to many movies.
Yeah.
And I remember that opening scene and I was so fascinated. But for some reason in my head, I thought they were tapping their feet like all the way around. Mm. Like they were some sort of, I don't know, body contortionists or something like that.
Well, there was one where the foot goes and does a 360. I'm like, what?
So I tried to do that. I was trying to do
that. Everyone did.
I just thought it was the coolest coolest thing. I thought it was the coolest mm-hmm. thing.
Yep.
And just the dance montages, the friendship between Willard and mm-hmm. Ren.
Yep.
I found Ariel personally super annoying. Mm-hmm. Again, a problematic character, but I do like that she was a strong, mm-hmm. strong person and yep. stood up for herself. But it's just, in growing up in a very conservative Christian home, mm-hmm. I just loved that these kids were pushing back just for mm-hmm. the love of dance.
Yep.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's just so great. And yeah. music.
And that's like one of my favorite scenes probably is when Ren goes to the council meeting
yes.
and gives his speech and,
quotes
like,
scripture.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Reads from the Bible. So reminding the people who used that as the reason why this behavior was not acceptable and how it could lead to problems, how actually take it back to the roots of what they say they believe and it's found within yeah. it.
I love that part where he goes, what did David say? What did David what did see? And then everyone starts laughing at him. It seemed really kind of yeah. genuine and off the cuff. And yeah. then he read it and then that became like very powerful.
Yep. Yeah.
Where John Lithgow was like the leader of the community. Ren used the exact same scriptures and all of a sudden was like, wow, like how are you going to deny this?
Mm-hmm. Well, I love that this was a dance movie, but really for guys.
Mm-hmm. True.
Right. It made dance okay yep. for guys. And, it probably like one too many dance montages.
I say not dance. Enough.
yeah, not. Got a little boring at times.
I say there's not enough. Can we talk about the montages specifically?
Sure.
Because that was, I don't know, yeah, when I was a kid, I was just like, holy Jesus, this is awesome. Yeah, now, Kevin Bacon didn't do all of it.
No, of course not. No.
But that one, didn't the main one with him in the warehouse by himself, didn't it just remind you of Rocky IV?
Yes, 100%. Yeah. But my favorite part of that is when he's drinking the beer and he starts moving his hips and then all of a sudden he gets angry and he throws the beer and then he starts like doing weird body contortions.
On the car, I loved he's it. Like throwing himself yeah. and throwing his head back.
Yeah.
I personally love when he's trying to teach Willard
yes,
to dance.
That is also awesome.
Yeah. I love Willard's openness.
Yeah. Yep.
To the big city boy mm-hmm. trying to just teach him to move and mm-hmm. be free in himself. And
yep.
I love that. I love Willard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The characters were great. And even the pastor, who obviously is not likable for much of the movie, then
there's a reason why, Joel.
I know, but
right, like you well, learn that you yes. learn it's he's not just a
yes.
hateful person,
and that he, even though he seems to be the moral backbone, or he presents himself that way, that then when he sees other people in the town doing things that are problematic, like he's the guy defending or opposing book burning,
he calls them out.
Yeah, and so. And then when they finally win him over to some degree, then in church, he doesn't say, oh, yeah, we lost, but these people are wrong. He's like, maybe, you know, maybe there's more to this and I need to think about how we're raising our kids and what are we teaching them so that then they can apply it rather than just be like, do what we tell you. And so I appreciated
well,
that.
Well, rewatching this, I realized it really was, the movie wasn't about teens. Mm-hmm. It really was about a father-daughter relationship, mm-hmm. like more of the father's role as his kids get older mm-hmm. and, you know, he lost a son and how that hardened mm-hmm. him
right.
and how he treats. It's really much more about John Lithgow than
right.
Ren. Mm-hmm. I feel like Ren takes a very side, other than the dance montages.
Mm. He maybe is the character to pull that stuff out that
yeah.
if he doesn't show up in town, none of that probably
yeah.
occurs.
Like really the theme is letting go,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Letting go.
Yeah. And trusting that mm-hmm. what you've done as a parent, has taken
yeah.
root and will have value for your kids when
and,
they
and
make
when,
their own choices.
When Vi and Shaw have that scene of, remember when mm-hmm. we used to dance?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, mm-hmm.
so back to John Lithgow, yeah. I'll put it in the notes that, you know, as a kid, I thought this guy was horrible. He was the enemy, and I'm watching with my daughter, and I'm like, he's got a lot of good points here. And I'm thinking, like, we should really listen to him and really take into consideration what he's saying.
And I'm sure your daughter agreed.
And then we kind of had, like, a little bit of an argument back and forth. There's like, I was laughing about it, but as a parent of
teenagers,
you
can see how he
like,
ends up there.
Yeah. I'm like, yeah, like, how did I become John Lithgow? Like,
you understand the complexity of the character now.
I felt him,
yeah.
and he became, you know, I could understand where he was coming from, right, and his struggle. So, yeah, watching it as an old man is totally different than watching it as a 10-year-old.
That's true.
Right? So, I don't know. If it can do that to someone in the present, it's got to have some kind of lasting effect, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So I could relate to it on all levels.
Sure.
I couldn't relate to Kevin Bacon being a full-grown man and playing a 17-year-old, though. Could
in
you?
Most of these movies. He's 24.
All of them.
All of them,
I think all of the
Shannon Doherty is the only one who is
He was 24 in this film.
24.
And I was like, because you watch it as a kid and you're like, this person's so cool. They got it together. Mm. Look how cool that smoking looks. And
wearing his tie.
He's got his, like, his style.
Confident.
Like, no one looked like that in high school.
Yeah.
And so we'll have to get Dr. Marco on to explain how we can identify these people and find out, like, they're interlopers. They're not teenagers.
Yeah, why as teens did we not go, he's not a teenager?
Because we believed everything on screen.
Yes.
Yeah. We believed it. We believed he was 17.
But why? When we can look at it now and go, clearly, he's not
even
close.
My daughter Charlotte watched every one of these movies except for one, and every time she could go, that's not even a teenager. And it kind of put her off a little bit.
Yeah. Well, but they do that now, too, though. That's mm-hmm. because...
Do they?
Yeah, because...
They still insert...
Adults.
Okay.
100%.
Okay.
And then that's because if you cast a child,
right,
there are a lot of rules right. and legalities right. around that. And you also have to have parents on set.
Mm.
And it's it really limits your ability to make money.
Mm, right.
So that's why they cast older.
Yeah. I
recently read...
You did the wrong one. There we go.
It's like a Zoom call. You're on
mute. There we go. I recently read... And I'm really sorry, I don't remember the person's name. I read an interview with a famous casting director who cast Grease. And he was explaining that he thought the cast of Grease was the best cast he'd ever assembled. And his reasoning was that when they make movies about high school, it's fantasy high school.
Hmm.
It's not
Makes
real
sense,
high
right.
school.
Yep.
It's a fantasy 100%. High school.
So
if they put real kids in the fantasy high school, it would be weird.
Hmm.
But Degrassi.
Right? Yeah.
Well, okay, but Degrassi, we talked about Degrassi.
Yeah, yeah.
We can't talk about it anymore. No.
No, but
Degrassi
just,
is different.
To refer to the last episode, which everyone should listen to.
Of course, yes.
They already have.
So much.
Apparently 1,000 people have listened to it. So.
But then unlike, which as we referenced, Degrassi influenced Beverly Hills 90210, clearly didn't follow that same pattern because it's adults playing
teenagers.
But again,
that comes down to logistics.
Yeah.
And how much money can you make and can you film it?
Or I guess how important it is to those people. Yeah, and maybe money wins compared to something like the Wonder Years. They cast kids, but then they talked about how it impacted
mm-hmm.
the work because the kids would have to be offset doing school for a certain amount
yep.
of time. So they just had to commit that this is what's most important. We want these characters to look like this and to be kids, then they had made the decision.
Yeah. You do have to make that call.
Yeah. So I guess the other low thing or problematic point is the complete absence of diversity, ethnic diversity in this film, which I wonder because it's apparently based on, this story is loosely based on an incident that happened, I think I put it in 1976 in Oklahoma. So I could tell me, I don't know because I don't live there, that there's a small town with no people of any color that live there.
I'm sure there are
it's
black
possible.
People in Oklahoma. In
no,
the
no,
70s
in the state. In the state, but I just mean, I'm only
that's
saying,
true.
I don't want to say I know.
Yeah.
I don't know. But that's my question of like, really? There's nobody with, everyone's just white, and this is a super white movie.
This is a very, very white
so
movie.
So that was one thing I noticed on rewatching. Yeah. That's questionable and potentially problematic.
I definitely think it's problematic. And the other thing was Ariel being like beaten up, like physically
right.
beaten
that was awful.
By her boyfriend. It's never even discussed.
Yeah. It was just like accepted.
It just accepted that it happened.
Which I guess is probably consistent. Like that would have happened.
I don't think so.
I
think it would have been.
I think women are assaulted and then no one talks about
no,
it.
No, absolutely.
Yeah,
but
I mean.
I'm just saying like, I think she would have had a conversation with a friend or someone would have commented on her black eye.
Yeah.
Or her dad, who's so protective, would have been like, who just beat you up? Do you know what I mean?
Or like, Ren, like, wait, you care about her. You're not going to beat the tar out of the bully?
I thought he did. I thought he did.
Did he?
I think he sort of commented on it, but it wasn't like a discussion about you were just like physically assaulted. Should you go to the cops?
Yeah.
Should you? Yeah. What should we? And if, even if she decides not to go to the cops, it should be a discussion.
Absolutely.
You know, it's not even commented on.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was an awful scene.
Yeah. Didn't enjoy that at all.
So are we collectively saying that we could definitely see this movie going into the cinema time capsule, despite all its, you know, discrepancies and
problematic elements?
Yeah.
I think it's a classic.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's got, it's nothing, it's a flawed film, but it's absolutely. Yep.
But for the time, for the genre we're talking about.
From our teen perspective.
I do love that final scene, and Joel, you put that in the notes, when he slides down the banister and says, "Let's dance." And that was probably the most exciting scene, and my daughter and I were both dancing to it. Because it brought it to a nice end.
It's a Gen X thing, too.
Like, and it was, the dancing was phenomenal. Like, there was a guy doing the robot. And
it's so good.
Which, that's interesting in itself, too, that how much dancing there was. And that, like, that scene goes on quite a while. So that was the movie. It was just, you were in the theater or on your couch with your, you know, Betamax playing and watching people dance.
It's so good.
Yeah.
Well, because in the 90s, we really didn't dance.
Like,
we
just moshed. Did that happen in other movies?
Yeah, well, it happened in...
Girls Just Want to Have Fun.
That was a TV show they were on, right? Where dancing was the show. But I'm trying to think...
having a dance.
Yes.
Right?
So what other movies can you think of any that just featured people dancing where that was the focal point? Like, they're forming a circle and the camera's in the middle watching them dance.
I feel like there are...
If this was like an early one that was popular.
We're going to have to dive into that.
We'll do a whole dance theme.
party
Fame
dance
will be on there.
That's true.
So good.
Breaking USA, good. I think that was one of the breakdance movies. Yep. So we're going to move on now. Thanks, Joel. Christy, you're going to give us your film that you're selecting for the Cinema Time Capsule.
Yes. So I'm very happy to introduce Karate Kid, or as Joel says...
The Karate Kid.
There we go. Which stars Ralph Macchio, who played Daniel LaRusso, Pat Morita. First name is actually Noriyuki Morita. He plays Mr. Miyagi. Elizabeth Shue, classic from the 80s, plays Allie, the love interest. Johnny plays the bully. William Zabka plays the bully, Johnny. And Martin Cove? Sorry, I don't even remember. Mm-hmm. Who is Kreese?
He's the bad sensei.
Oh, the bad sensei. Right.
Show no mercy.
Right. And the director was John Avildsen, who also directed Rocky 1 and 5 and the classic Lean on Me.
Excellent.
The writer was Robert Mark Kamen. He wrote all the Karate Kid Karate Kid and sequels.
And it's a favorite of Tiger Murray and Josh Betker, Gladiator.
So who's that?
Gladiator. He wrote Gladiator with why can't I think of
Cuba Gooding Jr.
Yes, Cuba Gooding Jr.
Welcome to Middle Age Kids. You know that guy who started
that thing?
You're baptized
now.
Producer was R.J. Lewis, however you, and Bud Smith. Anyway, we're getting super nerdy here. So the synopsis is that Danielson and his movie, and his mom, moved from New Jersey to California, which Daniel was very upset about. But that was for her new job, and Daniel really doesn't want to go. They move into an apartment complex that the caretaker becomes a good friend of Daniel's quite quickly in the movie, and that is Mr. Miyagi himself. But Daniel also discovers that he doesn't fit into the local blonde surfer crowd. And his love interest, Allie, becomes a problem because her ex-boyfriend is the main bully, Johnny, of that group and does not like her interest in Daniel. And I had completely forgotten that was the whole source of the bullying. And so Daniel is beaten up a few times until Mr. Miyagi decides to help him out and teach him, Joel, say it.
Karate.
Thank you. Anyway, and so the movie really is about Daniel and Mr. Miyagi's relationship developing and over time, because I don't think Daniel's dad is ever mentioned in this.
No, he does get referenced.
Does he? Okay. Yep. And that I think it's supposed to be that he passed away.
I can't remember. Or they got divorced.
But I thought it was divorce. I was reading somewhere that he passed away. I'm like, I don't remember that.
It seems like the mom's running away, like trying to give distance.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the mom is, you know, strong woman and doing a great job in raising mm-hmm. Daniel, who's very respectful and kind to the elders. Anyway, but it all culminates in the championship match mm-hmm. of the karate tournament, which Daniel competes in against his bullies. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I'm sure we can go on about waxing on and waxing off and the crane and all that.
But so, yes, that's the synopsis. What you had many, many choices. So, why did you choose this movie?
Well, I couldn't choose my all-time favorite because mm-hmm. you guys had discussed it in an earlier episode, I believe. My yep. all-time favorite is Adventures in Babysitting.
I love it still.
Also starring Elizabeth Shue. So, I went with another Elizabeth Shue film. Honestly, that was by mistake. So, I had to choose something else, and one movie I loved as a preteen was Karate Kid. I think karate was just so huge in the 80s, yeah. and you know, all the cool kids were doing karate. I also thought that Ralph was quite attractive. But to be honest, I think I related to it the most because I was brutally bullied all through elementary school.
That's so sad.
Well, I think it's a common experience. Yeah. And seeing a kid overcome his bullies mm-hmm. and having an adult who wasn't family come mm-hmm. alongside him
yep.
was would have been a dream for me as a kid. And also being the kid of immigrants, I could definitely relate to Mr. Miyagi's character on some level. So, yeah, I think there was that, you know, those connections were there.
So do you think this should go into our time capsule?
This was a tough one for me to answer because rewatching this, I was realizing at least the cast is more diverse than the other movies because of Mr. Miyagi's mm-hmm. character.
Yep.
However, extremely problematic in that it was written by a white man and Mr. Miyagi's character definitely fell into all the tropes of the older, wise Asian man mm-hmm. who has, you know, these wise one-liners that magically pan flute music starts whenever he speaks, who also is an expert bonsai tree sculptor yep. and an expert in martial arts.
Yep.
And also weirdly has a very thick accent after being in the US for 40 years. It's like, this is very tropey. Right. And so I think someone from an Asian background would have to probably answer that question. So
I mean,
it's tough.
And that trope that you pick up, that's like all the way through the 80s. In fact, actually Mr. Miyagi, Pat Morita played Arnold in
Happy Days
with a full Anglo, you know, persona. Mm-hmm. There was no accent or anything like that.
No, he had no accent.
Yeah. So, and there's a few actors that repeatedly show up, have that Asian trope when they didn't even, you know, have that kind of accent or dialect about mm-hmm. them. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting that we're now realizing this, but at the time we're like, yeah, this guy's obviously from Japan. Mm-hmm. Right, like there was no question.
Okinawa.
Yeah. Okinawa.
Yeah.
Like there was no. He did it really well.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where I just thought, okay, yeah, he's from.
Yeah.
But then I'm like watching Happy Days as well. I'm like, is that the same person?
Yeah.
And they didn't want to cast him because
because
he's a comedian. And they were like, they wouldn't even let him audition until they couldn't find anyone. And they finally let him audition, but it took a while. They were absolutely no to Arnold from Happy Days because they wanted a serious actor and didn't believe he could do it.
Which is interesting because that he has a lot of clever one-liners, which would make sense.
He's a stand-up comic.
Yeah, but, and they were delivered perfectly.
Give me some right now.
I can't. I didn't write them down.
What kind of belt do you have?
Oh, yeah.
Canvas. JCPenney, $3.98.
Yeah, that was awesome.
He had a bunch of them. Yeah, he had a bunch of them with Daniel about, like, how he's getting beat up and stuff. He was very quick, and it appeared genuine, where he wasn't just... Yeah, it was him being a real person, not just... I'm the wise martial artist that he engaged with Daniel and sort of teased Daniel about things at points, about his behavior and how he presented.
Well, and I do like that they touched on issues of racism, like at the beach when they were practicing and those guys back at the Jeep were calling him racist names.
That one.
Right, yeah.
And then he chops the...
He was like, how did you do that? How did you do that? Don't know. First time.
Yeah.
It's classic. And I do like that they talk about
the war.
They do, but you know, when I was a kid and I was watching it again, I had to do deeper research to fully understand that. Mm. Like, I don't feel like they they brought that, they explained it enough, mm-hmm. like, especially for that time. I feel like people might not have, kids anyway, wouldn't have understood, like, sure. what were internment camps.
Yeah, yeah, so when I was a kid, I thought, oh, they're talking about how he was in Japan and yeah. they were attacked. But then as I watched it, it was in reference to the internment camp, which yeah. I mm-hmm. thought was a really interesting piece
really
that I didn't yeah. understand at mm-hmm. the time.
Right. It was really important. And I feel like that needed to be drawn out a little bit more.
Sure.
Like, but I do like that it was brought up mm-hmm. And I do like that his character was like, you know, he was a hero. He was, you know, really kind and complex, and it wasn't just about, you know, either racism or him as a victim or, you mm-hmm. know, anything like that. Like, you know, he beat the crap out of those kids mm-hmm. and, yes, tropey that he was a martial arts expert, but I'm like, I like the complexity of this mm-hmm. character and showing, you know, his family background. And yeah, I thought that was good. But again, it's like, I'm seeing that through a white person's eyes, and mm-hmm. that's maybe it could be hugely problematic. I don't mm-hmm. know.
Mm-hmm. So this film now is ubiquitous. It is in the zeitgeist. There are young people that now have a following.
My kid loves it.
The Cobra Kai TV show yeah. is now yep. A fully immersed in our culture. So from 1984 to present, I mean, this still continues.
Almost 40 years.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
So, I mean, there's a lot to, I guess kids love it today too. Mm-hmm.
And at that time, my parents enrolled me in karate for several years. And so then in the lower level strip mall beside Fiesta Mall, me and Chris Papa and Tony Papa, who were collectively referred to as the late brothers because they were never on time, we met every week for karate class. So then when this came out, oh my gosh, it was all of our favorite movie, of course.
Yeah, absolutely.
We wanted to believe that we could become that good.
We could be in that tournament.
And then
the crane.
Yeah. yeah
did
yeah.
you ever, and I also did karate. Simon, did you do karate?
I did not.
Christy, did you do karate?
I dreamed of it, but no,
okay.
I did not.
So
I had to take accordion lessons instead.
That's way cooler, by the way. So we were all alpha males, obviously. And you would do the training, and then, like, I literally thought I was a karate expert.
Right.
And I went to my first tournament. I got destroyed.
Oh, man, we didn't do tournaments.
And then I remember trying to do it. And, like, I was a bit of a scrapper and just got fed. Like, I'm, like, getting in my karate stance and just got, yeah. like, just jumped on and just pummeled.
Jim Carrey has a good bit and when he did stand-up about how hating meeting people that were learning karate because they'd always be like, but you got to come at me like this. Yeah. Some, like, ridiculous motion in order for me to be able to defend it because we've planned it all.
I will say, though.
That's the way it felt.
Wax on, wax off actually works. I use it all the time on my kids when I'm wrestling with them and stuff, and they start throwing punches. I will do, and I'm doing the motion if you can't see me at home. You do the wax off when they try to punch, and it actually works.
Oh, I thought you were going to say it does work on your vehicle.
No,
the
it wax, works. No,
wax job come at is
me.
Perfect.
Come at me right now. You won't be able to hit me.
Let's just say there's no way Daniel did all that work in 4 days.
No.
No.
Paint the fence. And then, like, he's boom, boom, yeah. boom. So I did try all those. The only one worked that was
Were you ever able to figure out how Mr. Miyagi had those healing powers from rubbing his hands together
quickly? That was the other
quickly?
Trope. That was the other trope.
I've done that 100 times, too. And you rub your hands together, and their hands are warm.
yeah. Maybe that's it. Maybe Daniel's leg was just cold.
It's the caring.
Like, I just needed.
It's just the love and caring that came through the fingertips.
But it didn't really work. It was psychosomatic because then Daniel limped out.
Yeah.
So it didn't work.
It helped in the moment.
It helped him.
And it was his inner strength.
It was his cellular level then.
yeah. And like, and the other thing too, I loved that it was like Daniel was Italian, which in Barrie, Ontario at the time was quite diverse. My best friend was Italian.
You mean your grandparents were from somewhere else? That's crazy.
Yeah. And so my best friend's family was from Italy, and I was like, this is so cool. Like, I could
your
relate
people.
To it on so many levels.
So I did see this in theater, and I've said this on Simon's radio show. I remember my uncle was a sensei, and there was a sneak preview. Do you guys remember sneak previews?
Of course.
So sneak previews were you'd get to see the movie, like they wanted to test it out in a market. So they allowed any child at Limeridge Mall, Famous Players, any child with a gi on got to go for free. So then I showed up with my uncle, and there was like 300 other kids in gis, and we're all like practicing karate and stuff. And it was the,
those poor theater managers.
It was the best movie experience I ever had. We were all like sitting in cheering, yep. and like the end comes, and we're like, "Yes,
he did it!"
And then the very next day, trying the crane on our friends,
yeah, for sure,
it was totally an ineffective move.
No, I did kick a person in a tournament in the face.
Were they not looking in your direction?
And I had to turn around, and I got in trouble.
I'm sure you can seriously. I'm sure you can attest to the fact, though, that no tournaments are ever that glamorous.
No, they're not brutal. It's like you get in and you do a tap punch and then they throw the flag up. There's no like elbowing.
The tournament, but even the lighting and all the people watching.
It was in a dank church basement.
The tournament didn't make any sense because when the one guy kicks Daniel in the leg and then like he doesn't get disqualified.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
He just gets to keep going. But then, and then how the characters... It was so interesting to me watching that Daniel probably should have died at least 2, if not 3 times in the movie.
He was beaten pretty badly.
Yeah, that one, when he's run off the road on his bicycle by the motorcycle.
That was, like, painful.
For sure he would have, like, had a broken neck and then...
Collarbone at least.
As there's a really funny comedian named Gary Gulman who does a whole bit on The Karate Kid, so you gotta go listen to it. And he's like... Daniel deserved a lot of this beating.
That is victim blaming 101. That is not true.
Remember the Halloween dance.
Okay, hold on a second. Hold on. Now we're going, this is important to frame this. There's a whole fandom that is against Daniel and
that's
says,
such a problem.
Really?
Daniel, there's a whole fandom on it. Daniel is the reason for his own demise.
Okay.
Okay, so as someone...
I know there is.
And that Christy's is triggered by problem. This, so let's get into it.
Well, it's just, you watch it, I'm rewatching it as an adult, and thinking about this whole fandom that's like, Daniel deserved it because he was annoying. You know, and you watch it, and Daniel, like the writer has Daniel trying different ways of stopping the bullying. Mm-hmm. Like he avoids them.
Yep.
He challenges them. He fights them. Then he avoids them. And then he goes to an adult for help.
Yep. Tries to get the teacher to prevent it.
So you're saying the fandom is out of control and is basically trying to spin this narrative.
They're victim blaming.
I understand that. I think you're right. But what he did in the stall was dumb.
Number one, it was dumb. Number two, it was
I would
like,
not have done that.
There's no way Johnny didn't see someone crawling over the stall above him with a hose in a shower costume. Like that thing would have clanked for sure. It made some noise. There's no way
it
that
is the fantasy
Johnny was
teen
that
world.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it was just to give, I think, to me, like from the writer's perspective, you know, probably trying to give Daniel some agency.
Right.
And, you know, because every person who's bullied.
He's not just going to be kicked around. He's going to do something.
Well, you dream about getting your bullies
absolutely,
back. But then he learned that was not the way to do it.
Right.
And Mr. Miyagi taught him passivity through violence. Mm.
And that was
that's my husband's quote, to be fair. I stole that from him.
The ending of it all when the Cobra Kai kids are like physically damaging him.
Yeah.
But then they were happy to run him off the road on his bicycle with their motorcycles. But in the tournament, when their sensei told them to take out his leg, they're like, no, I shouldn't do that. I'll be disqualified. And they all, both of them turned so quickly to be like, I'm so sorry, man. I'm so sorry. Oh,
they didn't
the
say sorry. They respected him.
The guy that hurt his leg ran up
he?
And apologizes.
Okay. Right.
And then at the end, Johnny runs up and gives him the trophy
like
he deserved it.
I think that's authentic because it's very tribal. When we get tribal, I mean, even as a kid, I remember doing stupid things.
But they wanted to literally murder him through the whole movie until the last scene. And then all of a sudden, he's like, oh, you deserve this. I just thought that those characters didn't show any depth or moral distress throughout it.
They were brainwashed
until the very end, and then all of a sudden they just switched sides.
John Kreese brainwashed them to be militant killers, and they finally got out of his. Daniel released them.
Well, they had to wrap up the movie.
I know. I just would have liked to see some moral distress earlier, of like, were they at least questioning it?
Well, they
rather
did
than
during the tournament, but.
But no, that was just at the very end.
I
That's
know,
what I mean. Like,
but I'm
it
just saying
ends
that
with that,
that, that is so. That is.
Their, are we going yeah. to dispel Were the myth they? That Daniel deserved this then? Because I think
as
we
a kid
should.
Who was bullied, I would 100% think that no one deserves to have the crap in all like
I'm
beaten out of
that.
Them
no,
and
no,
almost
no,
killed.
No one ever deserves.
No one deserves.
I'm
that.
Good with that. Daniel made some silly decisions in order to but have even, agency.
But even like putting water on someone, you don't deserve to be almost killed.
I think right? that scene too True. Does set up the fact that. Mr. Miyagi is amazing. Like mm-hmm. that scene, like where he's like he's
Comes
on top
the
of the
yep,
and then yeah, like I thought that
he and like and he consistently teaches Daniel that the goal of this is not to fight.
No, it's
that
about
the, and he
self defense.
Yes, and to always prevent fighting, and that yeah. I think well, is the genuine view of most martial arts is this is to protect yourself, but you don't want to actually do this.
And it is about a dad. You know, who lost his son mm-hmm. and his son yep. who lost his dad
yep.
and kind of the ultimate father son. Like who wouldn't want their dad to kick the crap out of
Miyagi
the bullies
would go
and
to jail
right?
for that, unfortunately though.
100%.
Like
and those kids would go to jail
you
for
just
what
beat
they
up
did.
Five youths. You're going to
Well,
jail,
they were so. Actually in their 20s, but
that's another thing we've got to find. yeah. Yes. The one thing that I do want to talk about is the I think it's Joe Esposito soundtrack song.
Mm.
Is that a good song? I'm just going to ask you.
I know don't what remember my liking the song, but
you're the best around.
Yeah,
I don't remember the soundtrack really, other than
just
the pan flute
that song. Oh yeah, that song is a classic.
Simon, a musician, is that a good song?
I got to be honest, I don't remember the song. I always only remember the
you're the best
Pita
around.
Zatera
nothing's
going
to stop to take
Kid
you down.
Too.
You're yeah. the best around.
It's very 80s.
Nothing's going to stop to take you down.
Oh, I hate it now.
Do, 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 do.
You've just
keep,
ruined
keep
it
going.
For me.
I would literally.
Oh, how did that go again?
You're,
I would put that song on and do moves.
Your theater full of like 8-year-olds in karate gear would have been losing their minds.
Oh, yeah, man. I love that song to this day, and I often sing it to myself. If I'm running around, if I'm working out, I'll pop that on. No one knows because I got headphones
right.
on.
Yeah.
So no, you guys aren't fans of that song. It's
no.
just me.
I am.
You are?
Yeah.
Fist bump. We no. just reach across and fist bump that.
No memories of it.
But that's the
but
only
the pan flute,
song.
Was that on the soundtrack? All the pan
Probably.
Flute?
Probably.
I love pan flute.
I'm not saying I don't, but I'm yeah. suspicious as to whether or not it made it to the soundtrack. To the
I
album.
Think there's probably a bunch in there when, especially when I think it might be in the scene when.
No, there's tons of pan flute, but I'm just wondering if it
oh,
ended
on
up on
the soundtrack.
Album.
Strangely,
oh, right,
strangely, gotcha. I do yeah, listen to sure. pan flute more than I do listen to Joe Esposito.
The so. Other thing we need to talk about is that we want to talk about the Bechdel test again, and this does not pass.
No, it There's, doesn't. Yeah. Now that I
Allie's,
think about it,
you yeah. watch Allie's character, She's and it's an literally add-on. All she does is yeah. laugh at Daniel's jokes
yep.
and try to get him to like her.
Mm-hmm.
And I do like the humor between them, to be totally fair. And she does have one scene where she has a little bit of character. Two scenes. She trips the bullies at the Halloween party mm-hmm. when yep. they're chasing after Daniel. It gave her some agency. And then at the tournament, she's the only one who's ever been to a tournament before.
Mm.
So she has to explain to Daniel how it actually
right.
works.
Right.
And so it's like, oh yeah, she would have seen them. Like, or gone to them with Johnny,
right.
her yeah. ex-boyfriend. And so I was like, okay. But again, yeah, there's no conversation between two women in the entire movie.
With what she's
surprising.
Given, though, do you think she did a good job?
Elizabeth Shue?
Yeah.
With what she's given? I didn't love, like, I the whole, like, flirty laughing. Daniel, you're so funny. I like you even though you're poor. Yeah, that wasn't cool. No, I don't think she was given much, to be honest. But where she was given a little bit of play, I think, you know, Elizabeth Shue's a great actor and
she
did
is a wonderful
fantastic
actress, yeah.
job. And I really like her in the movie. But
is she still active? Is she still an active
I don't know.
Actor?
Is she, I don't know if she what she's done most recently. I mean, it's hard for women of a certain age because
she
no
was
longer,
in Cobra Kai. Mm.
Oh, she did she do
she's got a small part. She does yeah. come back, but it's the same character, so I don't. It really doesn't count towards like what
right.
you're saying.
Just a screen appearance
about
bring back an old character.
Yeah, and you know, and she's like, it's again. I do like the fact that she pushed Johnny after he sexually assaults her on the dance floor just to get back at Daniel. So I thought that was good, but again, not discussed at all.
Yeah.
It's
yeah, because if I saw Johnny do that to my kid, like, because they're all on the same dance floor,
yeah,
I wouldn't be a happy person.
Yeah.
No.
Right?
I'd hope not.
That would make me very upset. Good. Let's go to Johnny. I thought he was always despicable, and
he was terrible.
He did a great job being a despicable person.
Yeah, and his sensei is horribly despicable and does a good job at that.
Yep, nailed it.
Also, we should mention that in the whole, we talked about adults playing teens, Ralph was 22.
Which he looks younger than that.
Doesn't he? Yeah. He looks 12.
I would have put him 14-ish, but he was believable compared to Kevin Bacon. But yeah, 22.
Yeah, 22.
And I think the stories were on the set. People didn't believe him, his actual age. They all thought he was much younger.
Yeah.
And he still does look young in comparison to other people. True.
And Pat Morita, as a contrast, he played a lot older. He was only 51 when he played that role. And if he was a World War II veteran, the character of Mr. Miyagi would have been in his 60s.
Mm.
So he was playing older.
Hmm.
Just to circle back to Elizabeth Shue before we get a flurry of comments. She was in The Boys, the Amazon Prime show, The Boys.
Oh, okay.
She's in the first season. She actually has a pretty significant role. She's kind of an important character, even though she's not in it a lot.
Yeah.
And her character is killed at the end of the first season. So she's not in the other seasons. Spoiler alert. That is a few years old. But anyway, so she is active still.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. It is really hard for women of a certain age to land roles in general, still in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
The only reason I wouldn't know is because I don't watch things after 1999. So
99? Oh, I thought you were going to say 1990.
No, I'll go up to 1999.
You're forever partying like it's 1999.
Yeah, so like, you know.
It never gets to the millennium for Jeff.
That's right. So, and just to, have you guys ever heard the song Sweep the Leg?
There's a band that was called Sweep the Leg Johnny.
Well, there's a song called Sweep the Leg, and it's a great video, and it's about it basically sets up Cobra Kai before Cobra Kai, and it goes back and shows all the different characters. And so I do, for the viewers at home, go check out Sweep the Leg. It's on YouTube.
Cool.
Do you know who that's by, Jeff, offhand?
Oh, no. But can you do?
I'll see what I can do on the break. It's coming up shortly.
But just before we go, my favorite scene is when the guy goes get him in a body bag,
and
it's his face is ridiculous.
It's, so good.
It's like the overacted face.
Oh, it's so great.
And I continue to reenact it to my kids all the time. Like
get him a body bag.
Yeah, and then it's cringy, but it's just
great.
Executed wonderfully.
Oh, that was great.
So I just I wanted to
perfect villain.
That.
Yes,
perfect villain.
Oh yeah, there was nothing redeeming about the villains until the very end.
Just Johnny though, not the sensei. He was he was still evil.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But, I mean, they played that throughout.
They
were just bad.
Until the end when Johnny becomes the alpha and then they want to go to his tribe.
Right.
Right? Like his group. So it kind of... So are we done with that? We got all our feelings out? We've got our...
Yeah. Sweep the Leg. The song is by No More Kings.
It's a great...
Thank you.
It's a great...
Didn't even have to wait for the break.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we pay him so much.
I feel like we've discussed all the things.
So that was Christy's pick, Karate Kid, and we will be back after this short break.
This is it. This is the end of the line.
Telling me.
Did I tell you about the pool here?
For Daniel LaRusso.
Is this the only pool you guys got?
The future seemed far from terrific.
This place is a dump. You should go back to New Jersey.
Hey, I know it's hard, but we're not quitters, are we?
Until he met the right girl.
She's beautiful. I say she's beautiful. I think she's beautiful.
Is that your address?
You got it.
But that only angered the wrong guy.
You know, country club at 9:30.
Definitely.
You gotta be nuts.
And his troubles really began.
Dad, push it. Life and pain.
Then, in one man, he found a teacher.
I promise teach karate.
And a friend.
Fighting, always last answer.
How did you do that?
Don't know. First time. Power, whole body.
make a perfect picture.
But how do I know if my picture's the right one?
If come from inside you, always right one. Lesson about the balance, not just karate, lesson for all life.
Fight, train.
So I won't have to fight.
Hey, Karate Kid, let's take a move.
You know, points or no points, you're dead meat.
I don't have much of a cheering section.
You got me.
In the end, it will be in Daniel's hands. In his body. And most of all, in his mind.
Concentrate, focus, power. Remember, balance.
No mercy.
Columbia Pictures presents The Karate Kid.
Hey, what kind of belt do you have?
Canvas. You like? J.C. Penney, 398.
Paging Dr. Marco. Dr. Marco to the podcast. Dr. Marco to the podcast. Stat. Now's the time on the Cinema Time Capsule podcast where we ask Dr. Marco.
Hey everyone, this is Dr. Marco from California, medical consultant for Cinema Time Capsule. Today I've been asked to give my medical opinion, such as it is, on whether or not certain actors look like they were between 15 and 17 years of age in movies. This is weird. I think they're asking me about puberty and whether or not these guys have gone through puberty. Puberty is a very complicated time and very confusing for some people. The hosts of Cinema Time Capsule, very much included. But not for me, of course. I wasn't confused at all. It was a wonderful time. Okay, on to the actual movies in question. So, first, Karate Kid, Ralph Macchio, I guess he was supposed to be 15 to 17. He was 22 at the time. Yeah, he looks kind of like he could be 15 to 17. Doesn't even have any facial hair. Mr. Miyagi, on the other hand, definitely not 15 to 17. Okay, Lee Montgomery and Sarah Jessica Parker. Yeah, they look older. I don't know. Technically, I suppose, yeah, 17. Yeah, I guess technically you're fully developed. Man, that guy's got a fair amount of chest hair. Not more than me at the time, or one of our Greek classmates, but a fair amount. I don't think this guy was under 17. Kevin Bacon, I don't know. He always kind of looks the same to me. He's like 95 or something, and this, or 24. 24. He's 24. Yeah, I mean, maybe, I don't know. I don't think he could pass for 17. Patrick Dempsey, 21 at the time. Yeah, he looks like he could be in high school, I suppose. And John Cusack, 21. He was young. 21's pretty young. He could pass for 17 or 18. Sure. Sure, why not? You know, movies require some suspension of your disbelief, which is why we all enjoy them so much. For, you know, Fred Savage is going to be, I think, 17 or 16 or something in my mind for all time. Yeah, okay, that's totally unrelated to the topic. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed this little bit of medical learning. Once again, remember that this is not to be construed as any sort of medical advice, and that my advice is worth about as much as they pay me for it. All right, guys, take care.
Hey everybody, this is Cinema Time Capsule producer Simon here. Looks like the guys and Christy had so much to say about these movies that we're going to have to make this one a two-parter. So you'll have to tune in for our next episode coming out very soon to find out which teen drama made it into the time capsule. In the meantime, head over to the Cinema Time Capsule Facebook page and check out our latest poll. Send us a voice recording to our email, cinematimecapsule@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you at the movies.
Dare to walk a new path. Dare to strike out and find new ground.
Audiences and critics have found a new and different kind of movie. A movie that's left them cheering and touched their lives.
Yeah!
Touchstone Pictures presents Robin Williams.
Well, is this a dagger I see before me?
In the most highly acclaimed movie of the year, Dead Poets Society.
Language was developed for one endeavor, and that is
to communicate.
No! To woo women.
Gene Shalit hailed Dead Poets Society as a classic, one of the most magnificent motion pictures I've seen.
Tear out the entire introduction.
Rip! Shred, tear!
It's a compelling drama. Robin Williams' acting will astonish you. Rave sneak previews.
This is a battle, a war, and the casualties could be your hearts and souls.
And Joel Siegel proclaims Robin Williams brilliant. Robin Williams, he'll make you laugh.
I like Byron, I give him a 42, but I can't dance to it.
He'll make you feel.
Seize the day.
I'm gonna do it!
He'll make you care.
Medicine, law, business, engineering, these are noble pursuits. But poetry, romance, love, these are what we stay alive for.
Touchstone Pictures presents Dead Poets Society. Discover for yourself what all the cheering is about.
This has been the Cinema Time Capsule Podcast. For more information about Cinema Time Capsule, please email us at cinematimecapsule@gmail.com. This podcast was produced by Simon Wielden. The theme song was performed by Bruce Turney and Simon Wielden. Thanks for listening.